Call the Health and Social Services Committee to order at 1:30 p.m. on Wednesday, February 6, 2019. We're meeting today in room 205 of the Capitol Building. Please remember to silence your cell phones as a courtesy. Committee members present today are Senator Coghill, Senator Giesel, Senator Stevens, and myself, Senator Wilson. We would like to welcome the Senate President to the committee. Before the committee this afternoon is Senate Bill 37, the Renewal of the Vaccine Assessment Program, sponsored by Senator Giesel. This is the first time we're hearing this bill. We plan to hear the bill today and take public testimony, and we'll see if we'll move this bill out of committee today. I'd like to welcome Senator Giesel and her staffs, Jane Conway, to the table to present the bill, and you may begin when ready. And for the record, we'll welcome Senator Begich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm State Senator Kathy Giesel. I represent Senate District N, so that's in South Central Alaska around Anchorage area. And also for the record, I want to begin by telling you or declaring that I have no conflict ethically in preparing this bill or promoting it. While I am an advanced nurse practitioner, I take no compensation for the work that I do as a nurse practitioner. So, Senate Bill 37 reauthorizes or continues on the vaccine assessment program. This is a bill that was passed in 2014. It was Senate Bill 169, and the program since that time has been monitoring, purchasing, and distributing all childhood vaccines and a select number of adult vaccines to healthcare providers. In this way, we've been making vaccines universally available to Alaskans. This was an innovative solution back in 2014 to the challenging problem that we had of low vaccine rates and the difficulty providers were having in actually having those vaccines in their clinic and paying for them. So this was a partnership, it continues to be a partnership, public-private partnership between the state of Alaska and payers for healthcare, so insurance companies, essentially. It is fully funded through a vaccine assessment account where the health plans, the insurers and participants, actually pay for the vaccines ahead of time for their insured populations. There are no undesignated general funds used for this program. The bill passed in 2014 with a combined vote of 59-1 through the legislature. It has been highly successful. It leverages the state's ability to buy vaccines in bulk and then distribute them to the healthcare providers. So this reduces the cost of vaccines. It also removes the problem that providers had between state-provided vaccines for children, for example, covered by state insurance programs, and private-insured kids. The providers used to have two different supplies, and they could not borrow from the two supplies if they ran out of one. So now they simply have one supply of vaccines. Insurers are paying upfront for the cost of it, and even TRICARE has joined in on this program. So providers are able to administer the vaccines without a charge, other than, of course, a visit charge to the clinic. And it has lowered the cost of the vaccines by 20% to 30%. So there's been great support for it. You'll see letters, of course, in your packet. Aetna, Premera, the Alaska chapter of the American Academy of Pediatrics, as well as Growing Healthy Alaskans, has sent in letters. We have some additional ones. There was opposition when this bill was first heard. It came from pharma, which is a manufacturer, of course, of pharmaceuticals. They did not want adults to be included. But Alaskans need these vaccines, particularly seniors. The pneumococcal vaccine, the shingles, thank you. Thank you, Jane. Shingles. The nurse practitioner forgot. Yeah, the shingles vaccine for seniors, some of these select vaccines for seniors are needed, and so we wanted the program to include adults. And we did it. We have been doing that. We were the first state to do it. I don't know if any others even have succeeded since us. The previous states had only provided these vaccines for kids. There is concern, and I do expect to receive some emails from parents who say, I want to opt out of this. Are you taking away my ability to exempt my child for religious reasons from these vaccines? And we are not changing that at all. Alaska is maintaining that program. So I do want to emphasize that. I know that my staff is here to take you through a sectional, and I have to tell you, Mr. Chair, that there are two amazing people here from the department who will give you details on the wonderful success of this program. You've met Jill Lewis before, Division of Public Health, but you're going to be meeting Dr. Lily Liu for the first time. She is our new Jay Butler. So we had a wonderful multiple years with Jay Butler as the chief medical officer of our state. I want to highly recommend to you Dr. Lily Liu. She is a pediatrician, incredibly knowledgeable, and we're just going to have a really great running department because of her leadership. So with that, Mr. Chairman, thank you for the ability to present the bill.
Thank you. Ms. Conway, you want to walk through us, walk a sectional analysis with us?
Sure thing. Jane Conway, staff to Senator Kathy Geisel. Good afternoon. I will go through a sectional. It's fairly brief. Section 1 of Senate Bill 37 amends 1809-200, which is the statewide immunization program statute. I made a small error. It removes amends B number 1, which I will correct in the future. And removing the B1 removes the phase-in language from the statute, as the Alaska vaccine program is now fully implemented, so there will be no more phasing in. Section 2 amends AS 1809-220A also by removing the phase-in language from the statute. And then going on to Section 3, repeals 1809-220E by removing the opt-out option for assessees, since the program, again, is no longer in the phase-in stage. And then Section 4 repeals all the sunset provisions that were attached to this legislation, Senate Bill 169 in 2014. So basically, Section 4 repeals all the repealing language that would sunset the program in 2021. And that is the extent of the legislation.
Yes, Senator Coghill.
Maybe I could have her one more time. Section 3, the opt language is to those who are doing what again? I didn't quite catch the meaning of that. The Section 3 repealer?
Through the chair, Senator Coghill, initially the original bill during the phase-in portion of that bill, the assessees, meaning the insurers or the plans, had the ability to opt into the program, and that was the phase-in in period. And you will find in your packets now there's about 4 or 5 pages of all the plans who now are have bought into the program and are fully on board with the program. So now we're not doing any more of the opting in as a phase-in.
Mr. Chairman, that's what I thought. But I just wanted it clarified in my brain. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Take a brief out of use here. Questions for the bill sponsor at this time before we have the department go through their PowerPoint presentation? There, I see none. Thank you, Senator Geisel. Thank you, Ms. Conway. At this time, as Senator Geisel alluded to, we have two departmental experts here in the room with us, Dr. Lily Liu, our new chief medical officer, and Jill Lewis, the Division of Public Health. If you guys want to come to the table and just remember to place yourselves on the record before you begin.
Good afternoon, Chairman Wilson and members of the committee. I'm very honored to be here This is the first time I've testified in person, so please let me know if I don't give you all the information that you need. For the record, I'm Dr. Lily Liu. I'm the Chief Medical Officer for the Department of Health and Human Services. And I also had the privilege of serving on the Alaska Vaccine Assessment Program Council for the first 3 years, starting in 2015. You may notice in your collection of letters in your packet that one of them is signed by me, and that was written in my capacity as the Alaska Chapter American Academy of Pediatrics President. And that was one of the last things I did before I took this position. So I just wanted to disclose that. So I'm today here as the Chief Medical Officer, and I'm joined by Jill Lewis, who's the Deputy Director for the Division of Public Health. So some comments on the bill. I really appreciate this opportunity to speak to you about Senate Bill 37, which reauthorizes the Alaska Vaccine Assessment Program. And this is a program that's been very important to all Alaskans because it makes access to vaccines universal. And this program operates at no cost to the state, since the payers are very happy to pay for the vaccines that they would ordinarily pay for, but at full price. In 2018, we covered more than 366,000 Alaskans, which comprise 50% of all of our Alaskans. The department has seen the benefits of this program and that it has proven to be successful. So as a member of the council, I really appreciated the opportunity as a provider to sit at the same table with the payers and work amazingly collaboratively towards a common goal. So through this program, Alaskans gained improved access to vaccines, and one of the greatest benefits to providers was that it took a multi-layered program where some providers had to have two sets of refrigerators and two separate log systems and streamlined it into a simpler single system so that we saved in terms of efficiency with bookkeeping and ordering immunizations. And payers benefited from that 20% to 30% savings that Senator Giesel already mentioned. So one of the unique aspects was the ability to opt in for uninsured adults. So this program covers all children, and there are three states that have vaccine assessment programs that cover adults. The other two are Vermont and Rhode Island, but they only cover insured adults. So they have their payers pay for vaccines for their covered lives. But we feel that some of our highest risk Alaskans are uninsured adults. And in fact, we won an award for increasing our rates of pneumococcal vaccine in the over 65-year age range. And if you can imagine that older Alaskans who don't have insurance are a pool of people who are at highest risk. And when we're talking about infectious diseases, any collection of people who are at high risk can spread those diseases to other people. So the ability to opt in for your uninsured adult patients, it benefits the providers who take care of a lot of those patients the most. And so the providers who step up and they take care of all the members of our community who have the least in terms of resources are the ones who benefit the most, which I think is exactly where the benefit should go. It also benefits smaller providers, and I'm a pediatrician. So when we talked about the cost of this expensive medication and you have to buy a supply of a vaccine that may be more than your patients, we had some pediatricians saying, I just can't afford to vaccinate my patients. And so this makes sure that all patients have access to vaccines. So the benefits of opting in for uninsured adults, including getting discounted vaccine pricing and also that single vaccine inventory. One of the things you may not know that we've done with the vaccine assessment program is eliminate having to maintain a big warehouse where we ordered vaccine and then it was distributed as providers ordered it to the individual practices. Now, since we have a simplified, streamlined, single system, the supplier can get vaccine to most places directly, and it's very time efficient. But also, we have the ability in our downsized depot to help providers who don't want to order a full box, that they can just order what they need, and the extra can be redistributed somewhere to another practice without any waste. So that's a significant benefit of the program. Providers who don't opt in, they still get state-supplied vaccine, but not for those patients for whom no assessment was paid. So anyone is still welcome to buy vaccine at full price and administer that if they want to. But it's, if you have the option of getting it at a 20 to 30% discount, we feel like that's an irresistible bargain. So financing and procurement of vaccines is pretty complicated. And again, I just want to stress that one of the greatest benefits to our providers is the simplification into a single system and the streamlining of the process and the avoidance of having to maintain separate stocks that you can't mix, even if they're right next to each other in the same refrigerator. So, a lot of providers, before the vaccine assessment program was started, chose not to, they try to vaccinate all of their patients, but the more expensive vaccines like Shingrix or like the HPV vaccines, which are, that was the other award that we received was in our teen vaccines. And what I'm talking about are two awards that were given last year by the CDC, recognizing our improvement in our over 65 for pneumococcal vaccines and our teen vaccines, primarily for HPV. And if you don't know already, that's the vaccine that has the potential to prevent up to 90% of HPV-associated cancers. So that's our dream of a cancer vaccine. So we were recognized for having a significant increase in our teen vaccine rates. Getting back to the point I was making, some of the smaller providers, a small group of providers may not have invested in those vaccines that were more expensive, but this program provides for a very knowledgeable council that evaluates all the evidence and says, these are the vaccines that our people should get, and it doesn't matter how small your practice is, you're able to provide them. So, one of the things I wanted to especially point out is that we had a mumps epidemic. We had a mumps outbreak last year, and the vaccine assessment program, this was one of the first major tests. We ended up recommending a third dose for anyone who was vaccinated more than 5 years previously, and it was a complicated tiered system, but we ultimately recommended that for everyone in Alaska. And this program was able to handle the additional doses. They were able to get stock that was adequate, and the savings per dose, I don't have the exact number of extra doses that were given, but for all of those, the savings were, the AVAP price was $45.65, whereas the full price would be $75.04. So there was about a 40% savings in those extra doses, and the program was nimble enough to handle that need. So you've probably been hearing a lot about measles. And measles is different from mumps in a number of ways. One is it's much more infectious. The other is that vaccine is very effective. If you receive complete measles immunization, we believe that you're 97% protected. And unlike mumps vaccine, which tends to wane after a few years, measles vaccine is lifelong. One of the ways to think about it is if you had 10 people go into a room and none of them were vaccinated and someone with measles came into the room, over the next 2 hours, probably 9 out of those 10 people would get measles. But if you had 30 people in the room, 35 people in the room, and they were all vaccinated, probably all of them would be protected, to give you a sense of the the effectiveness of this vaccine. And measles was actually declared eradicated at the turn of the century, around 2000. So we're seeing increasing hesitancy in vaccination across the country. And so we've seen an increasing number of measles cases over the past few years. I think now it's in four states. We just heard that it was in, there's some cases in Texas and Connecticut, in addition to Washington, Oregon, and New York. So I think that this program has been clearly successful. We had that phase-in program period of 3 years. All of the payers have come on board now, and I think that we're ready to take off the training wheels and continue this program. So I thank you for listening to my testimony, and I will yield to Jill Lewis, who will go over a short PowerPoint.
Hi, good afternoon. For the record, I'm Jill Lewis, Deputy Director for the Alaska Division of Public Health. I'm very pleased to be able to be here to bring this bill forward to remove the sunset clause and reauthorize this important program for us. I'm going to walk through this short PowerPoint presentation. It goes over a little bit more of the nuts and bolts of how the program works so that you know a little bit more about what it is that you're reauthorizing. And feel free to stop me at any point if you have any questions. So as you know, we've already been over Senate Bill 37 does three things. It reauthorizes the program and removes the sunset. It takes out the obsolete language for opt-in phase that ended in 2017, and it also kind of resets up and makes good use of the vaccine assessment account, which fully funds the program, and there's no general funds used. So the vaccine assessment program, it provides all childhood vaccines that are recommended and most of the adult vaccines that are recommended. It really targets the privately insured, especially because that's who the payers are, but it also does allow for those providers who serve a lot of the uninsured who would like to opt in, which is very unique in our state. We're the only ones who have been able to figure out how to do that at this point. We cover the cost of the vaccines and the operation of the program through these assessments that the different healthcare payers give us. And by pooling that money in advance, we're able to make good use of bulk contracts that we can purchase from the Centers for Disease Control, which really gives us this 20% to 30% savings. And then we're able to distribute that vaccine at no cost to the provider, because the payers have already paid for the vaccine, so there's no charge. The healthcare providers still can charge the office visit or the cost to administer the vaccine. So there are personal costs that are incurred when they give a vaccine. They still can charge for that and get reimbursement from the insurance company. But the actual vaccine itself, the medicine, that is at no charge to them. The insurance company has already basically paid for it. Without this program, they would have to purchase the vaccine out of their own funds and then wait to be reimbursed once they had given the vaccine. So in the meantime, their cash is tied up in that inventory. So we're one of only 11 states who have a universal vaccine program that's funded through these kinds of assessments. As Dr. Liu said, we're one of only three that have a program that includes adults at all. And then we're the only state that is able to do it to address uninsured adults. If you're wondering why we aren't doing any uninsured children, they're actually already covered under a different program that is completely federally funded. So they are covered. They're just not covered through the Alaska Vaccine Assessment Program. So this diagram kind of shows you the flow of how the program works. We'll start at the top, and I'm on slide 5 for those who might be listening. The Alaska Assessment Council, the Vaccine Assessment Council, actually sets the assessment rate once a year. Then that rate is sent out to the payers, and they're notified of what the new rate is. And then based on the number of members they have, which they call covered lives, then that determines what their quarterly payment is. So it's proportionate to the amount of vaccine that they are expected to use is how much they're going to have to pay. So the rate is set as a per member, per month rate, a different rate for children and a different rate for adults. So for children, I think it's $8.65 right now and 88 cents for adults. There's a lot more vaccines for children, not so many for adults, so the rate is very different. So once the payers have given us the money and that gets deposited in the vaccine assessment account, then we, as the Division of Public Health, we purchase that off of the Center for Disease Control's contract, which gives us the cost savings. And then we ship it. Either it gets shipped directly to the providers, as Dr. Liu explained, or in some cases, that's not really feasible. And so we still operate the vaccine depot and we'll help to ship them. And the vaccine depot also maintains inventory control, quality assurance, and helps to transfer vaccine if someone has excess and someone else can use it. And so they manage it and they manage the waste that way. The providers who have received this vaccine, they go ahead and vaccinate, and then they can bill the insurance companies or whoever the payer is for the cost of the office visit. The providers report to us in our vaccine information management system what vaccines they have given, which is important in order for us to manage the inventory. And also to be able to use that information to forecast how much vaccine are we going to need to be buying in the future. So, and that is a requirement for providers who participate in the program. Then we use that data to provide that information back to the council in order for them to use it to help set the rate so that we come forward and say, oh, we think we're going to buy $10 million worth of vaccine this year. And then they look at that, and then they look at how many covered lives there are, and then that's what kind of determines the rate that is set. And then we're back at the top, where the council uses that information to set the next year's rate. And so that's sort of how it flows. It's there's a lot of steps to it, but it actually works very, very well and pretty seamlessly. So we've talked a little bit about the difference in the vaccine costs and the amount that we're able to save. So overall, it's about 20% to 30% that we're able to get because we're buying at a wholesale price instead of at a retail price. And just as an example, the current cost to vaccinate a child through age 18, if they had to pay for it in the private sector, over $3,000 per child, whereas it's $2,300. And we're saving almost $1,000 per child by being able to capture these savings. Dr. Liu talked a little bit about how many Alaskans we're covering. We're actually, the vaccine assessment program covers about half of the population, about 44% of all children. And remember that there's a whole cadre of children that are covered under another program already. And we cover 52% of adults. There is no other federal program that covers the adults that are not covered here, so those would all be private purchase after that. Also, as Dr. Liu talked about, we do have two vaccination coverage awards that we were given at the national level in recognition of how much we have improved our vaccination rates. And I think that as an additional handout, you may see that there is a graph that we provided with a chart on the top and a table on the bottom. And if you look at the graph, there's a big black line through the middle. And if you look at it from the left-hand side, that was before we had the vaccine assessment program. And then if you look at it on the right-hand side, that's after we had the vaccine assessment program. And you can kind of eyeball it and just see that it's a very much an upward trend overall that we've been experiencing in our vaccine coverage rates. And so that's one of the great successes of the program.
But did we have a quick question here, Senator Stevens?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Can you tell us, so the two programs for children, 44% of all children covered under this program. You said there's another program. Can you give us a percentage of the total children who are covered in Alaska?
I would say pretty almost all of them. I don't have the exact amount, but the children who are not already covered here under this program are covered under the Vaccines for Children federal program that's operated by the Centers for Disease Control. And that includes the children in Medicaid, children in the tribal health care system, uninsured children and underinsured children where an out-of-pocket cost or maybe vaccines in particular aren't covered, but they have insurance. So it really kind of covers everything else that we that doesn't have everyone who doesn't have a payer. So it's almost all the children.
Please, Ksenia.
So we think that this program is a win-win-win because public health, we get to reduce vaccine-preventable disease, which makes it a win for us. The providers have improved health outcomes, and then it's also much easier for them to manage their vaccine stock. The health insurance industry ends up paying 20-30% less for what they would have otherwise paid anyway. And all Alaskans get to save more money in the long run because of the medical costs and societal costs from preventing vaccine preventable diseases.
Senator Begich?
Just a quick question. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Do you have on that fourth bullet, have you been able to quantify that number? I was thinking earlier when you showed the savings that this is actually the sort of the unmeasurable saving. It's considerably greater than even the 940 savings you showed earlier, I would guess. This fourth bullet point, all Alaskans save more money in the long run. Have we been able to quantify that, or is there any effort to quantify how much we've saved as a result of this?
Well, I don't have that information on me. I can take that back to our folks in the immunization program and see what information we have on that and get that to you.
Yeah, if you can provide that to committee, we can distribute that out to them.
Okay.
May I speak to that, too?
Yes, please, Doctor.
So,
just put yourself back on the record.
This is Lily Liu, the Chief Medical Officer, and through the chair to Senator Begich. While we don't have exact figures, if we go back to measles, and remember the effectiveness of vaccine is that 97% effectiveness, and for those who get measles, which are mostly unvaccinated patients or people, one in four of them will require hospitalization, and one in 1,000 will have a very serious complication like encephalitis, which can cause lifelong brain damage, and 1 to 2 per 1,000 will actually die from that. So you can kind of get a ballpark of the kinds of expenses that you might save.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Senator Begich?
Just to be clear, I'm not asking you to do work that might be too extensive. I was just curious more than anything because I know that there will be a savings here, and that's very helpful information. Thank you, Dr. Liu.
So to talk a little bit about the return on health, I mentioned that, certainly public health benefits from avoiding the complications of vaccine-preventable diseases. This ensures that we have removed a lot of barriers to cost, barriers to access, and so that every child and most adults can actually get their recommended vaccines at no extra cost to them other than the office visit. So that opens it up so that more healthcare providers actually are willing to be able to give the vaccines, and it allows us to manage the supply of vaccines, as Dr. Liu says, both in an emergency. We've already been able to show that we can be nimble enough to respond to an emergency, and also that we can simply manage our inventory to avoid waste. Vaccines are quite expensive and very perishable. They require refrigeration and within a narrow temperature range, and they don't have a long shelf life. So it's very important that we can manage that inventory centrally. So here's an example of just some of the ways that individual vaccines are a good investment, so that every dollar spent on a vaccine would avoid in both medical costs and societal costs, the amounts of money that you see on slide 10. So the one for measles, mumps, and rubella, for example, is $26. So for every dollar spent on a vaccine, it would save $26 in avoided costs that we would otherwise incur. So in closing, reauthorizing the vaccine assessment program really ensures a healthier future for all Alaskans at the lowest possible cost. And if you have any follow-up questions, we're here today, but also our contact information is provided.
Are there any questions for Ms. Lewis or Dr. Liu at this time? Senator Begich.
Do we all get the face painting if we get the vaccines? In the last picture there.
We can see if we can get you some special Band-Aids for with your favorite cartoon characters.
Thank you very much for the presentation.
And I do have a question. On the shelf life of the vaccine program, has there been any complications of the storage, or have you been able to get them out to or redistribute them to other communities in either in our state or lower 48 so those vaccines don't go to waste?
Through the chair to Senator, Senator Wilson, we've operated the vaccine depot for many, many years. It predates this program by decades. We pretty much always have managed a centralized inventory for what we did supply from the state. We just did not supply everything through this program. Historically, we actually had enough federal money to supply everything. And then and that was really the work of Senator Ted Stevens, who got us additional money so that we could actually afford to purchase all the vaccine. And we were what was called a universal vaccine state for decades, for more than 30 years. And then when Senator Stevens was not reelected, that funding went away, and a precipitous downfall in our amount of funding, through efforts of Senator Giesel, we were able to get some temporary funding for a few years to cover that gap in funding while we figured out what this permanent solution would be, and this assessment program is that. So that for more than like 30 years, we have always been centralized. What was in jeopardy was without all of that federal funding, we had no way to continue to be a universal vaccine state, and providers were going to have to start paying out of pocket in order to make up the difference. And as you can see from how much vaccine we have, we have 10.5 million authorization right now. So we spend 10.5 million just in this part of the program, the Alaska Vaccine Assessment Program. So that would have been a lot of out of pocket for the providers. And so our vaccine depot is very skilled at sending vaccine around the state, and actually was really put to the test when we had the H1N1 flu, and there was a lot of vaccine that we had to rapidly get out, and we were one of the few states who was able to do that because we have a centralized depot. Most states really struggled with how to get that distributed because they weren't centralized.
And I remember my prior employment history and of being on the teleconference calls with our local providers and the sort of the local incident command system for the depot to get the incident H1N1 vaccines out to across Alaska. And I think we did a really swell job on that through all the sort of health systems from the tribal health to the community health centers to the private docs to the hospitals. The coordination that the depot provided was amazing through the Department of Health and Social Services. You have wonderful folks that you inherited, Dr. Liu.
I agree. So this is Lily Liu again, and to the chair, if I can add to that, anyone who touches vaccines, because they're such a precious commodity, goes through repeated detailed training on how to maintain them in the appropriate temperature range and how to make sure they're not outdated and everything. And one of the things this program did was decrease the number of people who have to be involved because we simplified it and streamlined the distribution process. And I don't believe there have been any incidents of increased wastage because of product handling. And I think that it's significantly improved because of the simplification.
All Any other questions? Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for your comments. Can you address you have addressed the uninsured. What about the homeless? Where do those folks go? If you go to a medical doctor, they're going to charge, right? I would assume there are some folks out there that simply can't pay anything. Can they just go to public health? How does that work?
So, and yes, they do. They are taken care of by the public health nurses and our public health care system. And we have the number. It was 14,000 immunizations were given in 2018 to just those sorts of people who might need services but don't seek care through insured private provider routes.
Thank you.
Any other questions for the presenters? Thank you, Ms. Lewis and Dr. Liu. This time, Senator Giesel or Ms. Conway has any other closing comments this time? Yeah. Any final questions for the bill sponsor at this time? All right. At this time, we'll go ahead and we have to open up to public testimony. Is there anyone here in the room in Juneau that would like to testify on Senate Bill 37? Hearing or seeing none, we'll go to the phone lines. We'll first start with Fred Potter.
Hi, this is Fred, and may I ask Dr. Budo has just got out of a patient appointment. She cannot get through on the line currently. So if there's someone who could give me that information, I know she's trying to get in right now, and we do want to respect her patient schedule if that's a possibility.
Are you willing to – you're asking to give up your time for Dr. Budo?
Well, she's not logged in yet because she can't get through on the line that I had sent her this morning. But I'm just trying to get the correct number to her in case there's a different number she should be calling, or perhaps if someone can call out to her. I don't know what the best way to handle that is. She is at a break between patient events, so if we can talk to her anytime, I'll yield to her just because of her scheduling issues.
All right. We'll work on that situation. But, Mr. Potter, if you want to go ahead and start and plan to put yourself on the record in any organization or affiliations you're representing today, and plan for 3 minutes for your testimony. And you may begin when you're ready.
Thank you. My name is Fred Potter. I am the managing member of KidsVax, and KidsVax is under contract to serve as your administrator, under contract with Defense Department of Health and Social Services, as your administrator of the Alaska Vaccine Assessment Program. In that role, we manage the collection process, the remittances to the state, and coordinate the advisory council meetings and offer the support, including maintenance of the website, where you will see there is a tremendous amount of transparency. I would like to make a few points, if I may, and certainly answer any questions. But first, to Senator Wilson's question, if I heard the name correctly, concerning wastage, it is true and demonstrably true that programs such as Alaska's, and Alaska's in particular because of your unique geography situation, reduce the waste. And anybody can understand that just as a matter of general inventory management. Having vaccines in two separate silos, which is required without this program under federal law, makes it more difficult to efficiently use vaccine supply. Additionally, there is a mismatch between manufacturer packaging in some instances and the number of doses required for certain multi-dose vaccines. So the ability to move vaccines and use them between the two programs is enormously helpful. The numbers are actually staggering. In New Hampshire, for example, we had occasion to find out the wastage in the TRICARE distribution in a military clinic. It was nearly 50%, whereas in the state supply, it was down in the 2 to 3% range. It's more challenging in Alaska, but Alaska's numbers still are remarkably good, given the physical challenges that are unique to this state. in connection with Senator Baggy's question, I'm not aware of any Alaska-specific studies on this, but there is a robust body of literature maintained by the CDC. And historically speaking, the documented direct medical savings costs for vaccines were approximately $10 saved for each $1 of vaccine cost. That number has been studied by independent researchers over decades. It's quite persistent. It's been trending upward. And for all the reasons that Dr. Lily Liu mentioned, it's a rather enormous impact. The best estimates I've heard recently are something closer to 13 to 1. So as Jill Lewis mentioned, with a $10.5 million budget each year for this program, the expected long-term health care savings are in excess of $100 million for each year the program is operational. It's a rather staggering number. Now, some of those vaccines would be administered without the program, of course, but the efficacy of vaccines in terms of long-term health savings is very, very well documented, and it's certainly Alaska is benefiting from that now and into the future.
Mr. Potter, your 3 minutes is about up if you want to have any wrap-up closing comments.
Sure. I'll just mention 4 points and be glad to answer questions on them. One, Alaska Vaccine Association already has implemented nationally recognized best practices for the program despite its relatively young age. Secondly, you recall the opt-out for payers, which was allowed. One, I think, telling example of payer satisfaction is the fact that all the opt-outs were withdrawn prior to the second year, even though they had up to 3 years for that. Third, and Jill Lewis and Dr. Liu have done a great job of pointing over the operating costs, but the operating costs of your program have gone down each year, and remarkably, this year and perhaps expected for next year, the assessment rates have been held steady, notwithstanding increasing vaccination costs. That's because the program has matured and fully funded its financial reserves. And finally, the advisory council voted unanimously to recommend continuation of the program to this committee. Thank you. Glad to answer any questions at any point in time.
Thank you. Are there any questions for Mr. Potter? All right. Thank you, sir, for your testimony. And we are trying to reach out to Dr. Budo. So we are trying to make that contact now. Next on the phone, for testimony, we have Gary Stranigan.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. Thank you. For the record, this is Gary Stranigan. I work with Primera Blue Cross Blue Shield of Alaska. And I just wanted to call your attention to the letter of support that I submitted to address to Senator Giesel. It should be in your packet. And I also wanted to echo all of her comments. It's a great program, as you've heard with the testimony you've listened to today. And I just wanted to commend it to you and urge your consideration and passage of Senate Bill 37.
All right. Thank you, sir. Next on the line, we have Dr. Rosalind Singleton.
Hello, this is Rosalind Singleton. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, ma'am. You may begin your testimony. Plan for about 3 minutes.
Thank you. I am a physician with 30 years of experience in Alaska, and I have seen with my eyes a dramatic impact on the health of Alaskans through vaccines. Through vaccines, we have nearly eradicated transmission of hepatitis A, wherein years ago we had up to 4,000 cases in a year with huge impact on our public health system. And in the last year before vaccine, we had 2 deaths of teenagers from hepatitis A. Now we have virtually no transmission in the state. The other thing I want to point out is that currently there's an ongoing measles outbreak in Washington. we have no measles transmission right now in the state, but the Alaska Vaccine Assessment Program is absolutely critical to help us be able to respond if we had a case imported into the state. With the Vaccine Assessment Program, the state has much more flexibility in being able to provide vaccines to adults who don't fit categories that traditionally would have access to or funding for vaccine. So I want to just add my strong support to the renewal of the Alaska Vaccine Assessment Program. Thank you very much. And if there's any questions, I'm happy to answer them.
Thank you. Any questions for Dr. Singleton? Thank you, Doctor, for your testimony. Next in Anchorage, we have a Matthew Hirschfeld. Matthew, if you can state your name for the record and plan for about 3 minutes for your testimony.
Hi, this is Matthew Hirschfeld. I'm a pediatrician and also the board chair for the All-Alaska Pediatric Partnership, which is an organization dedicated to improving health and wellness of children and their families in Alaska. I would also like to echo a lot of the comments made by the previous people who've testified, including Dr. Liu and Jill. They did a great presentation. Vaccines are truly one of the great public health successes in the history of medicine. And this Senate Bill 37 essentially makes it accessible to almost all people in Alaska. And with that amount of people who are avoiding death as well as serious illness due to vaccine-preventable illnesses, I strongly support this bill, and it's done amazing things for people in Alaska, and we also have a letter in, hopefully in your packet, that supports this from the All-Alaska Pediatric Partnership as well, and I'm happy to take any questions.
Thank you. Any questions for Dr. Hirschfeld? No. Thank you for your testimony today, Doctor.
Thank you.
Next on the phone, we have Dr. Jody Budo. Dr. Budo, if you can state your name for the record and plan for about 3 minutes for your testimony, you may begin when ready.
Hi, this is Jody Butto, B-U-T-T-O. I'm a pediatrician in Anchorage, Alaska, in private practice, and I'm also on the AVAP board. The vaccine assessment program came about with the help of Rob Singleton in an endeavor that I was following the lead of other pediatricians that have provided in other states to provide universal access to vaccines for particularly to kids. I know this expands it a little bit more than that, but way back a number of years ago now, we had a universal vaccine program for Alaska's children. And then due to funding cuts, that had to go away, and it became incredibly cumbersome for pediatricians to keep track of private vaccine and public vaccine and who had what insurance. And then it was very cumbersome and very costly. And then some of the kids were had to slip through the cracks because they of either funding or not funding, and their parents were unsure if they were going to have to pay for vaccines. And so the AVAP program and the funding that it from the state that helps provide for this program streamlines that and really does provide access for all of Alaska's children to receive the necessary vaccines to give us a healthy state. And so as a private pediatrician, I am always for vaccines, and I'm very much for this program. And I speak for my clinic and my colleagues that I met at lunch and told them I was testifying. And they said, "Well, they agree with what we're trying to do here." I'm available for any questions.
Any questions? No. Thank you, Doctor, for your testimony today.
Thank you.
All right. I think that's everyone that we have online. We'll check again. Anyone else here in the room in Juneau that wish to come forth to testify on Senate Bill 37? Seeing and hearing none, we'll go ahead and close public testimony at this time. Now I'd like to invite Senator Giesel or Dean back. Any other closing comments you guys may have? All right. Any other following questions for committee members? At this time, are there any amendments? Seeing none, Senator Coghill.
Sure, Mr. Chairman, it'd be my pleasure to move that we move Senate Bill 37, version 31 LS0162A from committee with the individual recommendations and the attached fiscal notes.
Is there an objection to the motion? Seeing or hearing none, the move bill passes from committee. We'll take a brief at ease to sign paperwork. Back on the record. That concludes our business for Senate Health Hess today. Is there any closing comments from committee members today? Hearing or seeing none. On Friday, February 8th, we'll hear from the Governor's Council on Disabilities and Special Education. We want to thank everyone for attending, and we are adjourned at 2:27 p.m.